Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you radical ideas. Well, that's what WBAI is all about. It's all about radical ideas. But we have some radical ideas in psychology as well. Having been around this field for quite a number of years, there are a lot of teachings that I've learned to question, including my own. You know, over the years, I've found myself believing in one thing and then 10 years later saying, well, how did I ever believe that? Why did I believe that? It made so much sense. Most recently, I've focused my attention on what it takes to have successful relationships. Because it's the single most, I think, confusing issue on our planet. I think if people had good relationships with each other and they were satisfied and happy with their relationships, I think people would wage less war, kill less people, have less needs for guns and property and destroying and hurting others. So I think love is the answer. Sounds so simplistic. No, love is not the answer, but being at peace is the answer. Being okay on the inside is the answer. It seems. I'm not so sure. By next week, I may believe that that's not true either. I mean, Freud once believed that there was a set of homeostasis that we were looking for. He believed that, since he was a neurologist originally, that all nerves were looking to find homeostasis. And that humans, when they get out of whack, are looking to find homeostasis. So what he keeps searching for, what he helped humans do, is find a way to re-find their balance. Well, then after Freud died, they discovered that the nervous system is not looking for homeostasis. It's looking for this ever-ready potential. Instead, this potential to fire, the ideal condition of humanity, is alert, awake, not asleep, not at peace, not at rest. Because when you're at rest, when you're flaccid, you're kind of dying. If you're not growing, according to the nervous system and the cells of the body, if you're not a growing cell, you're a dying cell. There's nothing in between. You're not a just stay-at-home cell, you know? You don't sit around as a cell, watch television, eat pizza, and hang out because you've earned your right to do it. No, you're dying. You're going. You're leaving. Now, with that in mind, we are always looking to grow is the ideal condition. On yesterday's program, we talked about the possibility that this question about how we are loved is maybe kind of an illusion, that we're not loved for who we really are, but we are loved for who we make believe we are. That every one of us make believe we're something, and we attract people that way. Now, perhaps we should look at what our value is to other people. Today, I want to look at, well, you got to be valuable to somebody. The difference between grandiose people and depressed people, the grandiose people believe that if they try hard enough, somebody's going to value them. The depressed people believe that no matter what they do, nobody is going to value them. See, that's what depression is. I quit trying to get somebody to love me. So I'm going to go into my cave and hang out there. And no matter how much you tell me you love me, no matter how much you flower me, shower me with gifts, I know I'm unlovable. Now, we live in a world of commodities, and this is a segue. Think about commodities, where wherever there's abundance, right? If we have too much of anything, we don't have competition, we don't have cravings. Many years ago, there was no electricity, and there was no real noise that was as bothersome. There were natural noises, animals, so on and so forth. Mostly, there was an abundance of quiet. Remember, in many years ago, I mean, like 100 years ago, people would wish there would be something to get excited about because it was boring. It was like, oh, it's so quiet around here. So we didn't crave quiet, but nowadays, no, you'd spend money on jet planes, you go looking for quiet, you try to find quiet, you try to, you know, all I want is some peace and quiet. It's like you crave it. So noise is abundant. Quiet is the commodity. There was an abundance of fresh water many years ago when I was a kid. There were streams, there were lakes. There were places you could go. I remember going up to Croton Dam, and I remember drinking the water at Croton Dam and on the stream, and I said, oh, this is really fresh, nice water. It tasted so good because it was in movement. But we didn't crave water. Nowadays, they bottle it and sell it to you. So very often, if you're traveling around, especially if you travel through Europe, you wish for a good glass of water. You wish to find something that doesn't taste slightly foul. I feel that way nowadays about fruit. Right? One of my friends was saying, whatever happened to mimosa trees and blackberry trees? Where are they nowadays? You know, do they exist? All the fruit this year that I've eaten so far has this kind of a basic bitterness to it. And I said, how could this be? What happened? Okay, so now the commodity is fruit that tastes good. The scarcity is fruit that tastes good. The craving is for fruit that tastes good, or water, or quiet. I remember once there was a can. Somebody brought me a can from Jerusalem. They had traveled to Israel. And then it said, air from Jerusalem. And it was a can of air. And I thought to myself, how funny. You open this up and you could breathe Jerusalem air. But I said, what if it would be at some point if people just wanted to bottle air, period? Right? And what would happen there? Well, here it happened. It happened now. So much smog, so much pollution, so much dirt out there. When you finally get out around the oceans, you begin to realize what you've been breathing. So air is the commodity, so much so that it's even bottled and sold. There are bars that have air. They have oxygen bars. They say, come on in and breathe some oxygen. Do you ever think you'd be paying for that? How does this have to do with what we're talking about? So we see what was once common, we now crave as the supply becomes scarce. Now, this is about you as a commodity. The commodity becomes desirable as long as the supply becomes scarce, and this is true with people as well. Yes, we realize in order to get loved, in order to get valued, we have to offer something that's not readily available. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. This is a part of a two-part sequence starting yesterday. If you haven't heard it, it was a terrific exploration of a null hypothesis, which is basically that people love you not for who you are, but for who you're not. And so you could explore this, and it could help understand what happens in a lot of relationships. Now, in order to get love, we have to offer something that's not readily available, or we have to offer something that has more demand than it has supply, for example, sex. Almost every young man of a certain age who is not attached is driven by a biological imperative to have sex, right? It's built into his genes. Go have sex. Sex something, sex anything. Now, the females are not as driven to have sex. They're driven to select the best sex partner. So make sure you choose the guy with the right tattoo. You know what I mean? You gotta find some signal that tells you who is the strongest, who is the best. Who would be the best for my gene pool? So there's a lot of desire, which is on the men's part. There are guys out there, you know, if you go get off a plane in Greece, right? You're a single woman, you get off the airplane, you're going to be whiffed. They're going to smell you. They're going to They're going to say, oh, there's one. The commodity is sex because there's a smaller supply of sex than there is abundance of sex drive in men. So most people figure that out. And most people figure out, well, sex is one thing, but what about when you're a guy and there's enough sex available to you? What else do you want? And we all figure that out. What if we have not just sex to offer, but we have to offer other things in order to get loved? We even figure it out with our families. What about with our family? Well, sex isn't an issue with our family. You know, with our parents don't love us because of, we may be crying, we may be nasty, we may feel angry, we may feel something. So they want, we have to develop a character that pleases them to get loved. Let's say you're the only child, the oldest child. Now, you're a child, you have two parents, it's really nice and lovely, everything is fine, you have your two parents and they will both love you. Then another kid is born. Now they pay attention to that other kid. What do you become? What happens to you as the elder child? Right away you become a surrogate mother or father. It's automatic because your parents like that you do this. And so now your commodity is you're a caretaker of others. And then you become a caretaker of them as well. So the oldest child becomes a caretaker. And there you are, caretaker of the family. Now, this is a role that is not you, but it's one that you adapted to get loved and appreciated. So what commodity do you offer that's so that people will find you desirable? Now, think about this. When you meet somebody for the first time, will they value you or not value you? You know, sometimes you could just look at somebody and value them. Oh, he's too old, he's too young, he's too fat, he's too skinny, she's too this, she's too that. And just automatically you're not valued. But then even if you're bent out of shape, even if you're too old or too young or too anything, you can still be valued if you develop a good act. See, you have to have something that they desire. And there are people I know who are elder people who look completely broken. When they show up in a room, they're just, everybody likes them. Because they developed a character, they developed a thing, they developed an act to be loved and valued so that they're not sent out onto the ice, you know, to be waved to as a part with the planet. So, for example, if you have I remember when I was a kid, there was a soldier who was a captain, and he had what they called a chest full of brass, which meant he had these medals. And these medals were little ribbons. They were little tiny ribbons. There was a red ribbon, and a blue ribbon, and a green ribbon, and a striped ribbon, and one was striped one way, and one was striped another way. And a couple of things that dangled with stars on them, but it was mainly these ribbons. And he had many of them, I would say like 40 of them on his chest, you know, in rows. And I would say to him, what are they for? And he would go over one or this is when I was in Costa Rica and I worked with the Vama Navava. Here's from the agricultural Semajeda. Here's the rifle Vama. And little by little, he pointed to things on his chest that were part of his life. And little by little, he got to see who he was, but he didn't have his family. This is where my mother comes from. Here's my father. You didn't see that. You just saw what he did. Wouldn't it be nice if you meet people for the first time, if they have a chest full of medals that included, and my mother does this and my father does this, that you could find out the whole thing? I mean, Facebook is trying to do that. You know, the internet is trying to do it, give you out some sorting mechanism. But what are you going to present of yourself? Which brings us to this whole idea of internet dating and coupling and LinkedIn, which is associates. What do you present? You go for a job nowadays, right? You go for a job, you go to work somewhere, and you wonder, you want this job. Who are you going to present? You're going to tell them that last night you were drunk and you almost fell down and you barely woke up this morning? Are you going to tell them that you're going to tell them you were fired from your last job because nobody liked you? You're going to tell them that no. You present a certain face. You wear, you ask yourself in the morning, which shirt will I wear? What tie will I wear? You know, what shoes will I wear for this interview? How long should my skirt be? How short? Is it a man interviewing me or a woman? You put all these things into your mind to see how you can get the other person to value you, which is, in effect, how you get them to love you. Because if they value you, they say you're hired. I met a lady last week. We were trying to find somebody who would be a caretaker for somebody. I met this lady. It was like within, she had the skill down so pat that within 5 minutes, I was ready to say, you're the one. Because her act was so good. Now, just because it was an act, it doesn't mean there's something wrong with it, because we all have an act. So I'm going to ask you about yours. What do you put out there to people? What do you tell people to convince them that they should value you or love you? Like, you can offer, what do you offer? Here's what we offer, some of the things we offer. And I'm going to ask you to call in later and tell me what you think you offer. And I also want you to go on the Facebook page and answer this question, which Tom will probably put up. What is it that you offer people who meet you? What do you present? Now, that doesn't mean this is real, because we know this is not the real you. This is just what you do. For example, you see somebody who looks very sexy, right? What do they offer? I offer you unbridled passion. I offer you that if you win me, I'm going to give you the best sex of your life. Right? So you could have, as part of your medals on your chest, unbridled passion. I imagine what that ribbon would look like. Or you could be a different kind of person. I offer you to pick up your socks. You leave your socks laying around, I'll pick them up. I'm a caretaker. I'm the kind of person who washes your dishes. I'm the kind of person who picks up after you. I love to make things straight. Talking to a man yesterday who said he was married for 15 years. And he said to me, she still argues with me about my socks. Or you can offer to have positive energy. You could be somebody who says, hey, you come meet me, I'm going to lift your spirits. I am jubilant. I am a fun person. Bring me and I will lift your spirits. If you're depressed, you could value me because I'm a spirit lifter. The spirit lifters are the people who get invited to parties the most, you see? Because when you think about who you're going to invite to your party, you don't think about inviting the drag. You know, you don't want the sickly, right? You don't think of that. I do. I want to invite everybody. But what you think about, let me see, who will be good for the party? Somebody who lifts spirits and somebody who picks up socks. Even have some unbridled passion around. What else we value? We also present no complaints. I'm a person who has my complete attention on you. This is the way some people present themselves. And my complete I have no complaints whatsoever. I don't have anything to complain about. So this is all about you. See, and at first you offer yourself as being a person who has almost no needs, no identity, and certainly no negativity. Now that's at first. So imagine you meet somebody and this is the way they are at the beginning. And in fact, you marry them for the unbridled passion, picking up your socks and positive energy and the no complaints. But little by little, the stuff emerges. And you say, oh, wait a minute, that's not what I signed on for. But of course, you'd see you didn't understand. This is the presentation of self. This is what we all do. Another thing you might offer, and I'm going to ask you to call in with what it is that you offer people, and don't tell me it's true, because it's not true. It's a lie. Whatever you offer is probably a scheme. It's probably some manipulation. I offer my strength. I offer you my leadership capacity. I offer you how strong I am of spirit or even of body, so that my strength can make you feel stronger. Now, let's take a look back on these four things. If I offer you my unbridled sex, that helps me make you feel sexier. See? Now you feel like, phew, Mr. or Mrs. Wonderful, because you're having such wonderful sex. If I offer you positive energy, well, then you're not so depressed. Now you, wow, I feel better. I'm with that person. Or if I offer you no complaints, full attention on you, but somebody's willing to listen to me, how terrific. It's all the beginning. Or I offer you my compassion, my willingness to hear you and embrace everything you have to say. But I'll tell you something, after a few years, I'm going to get bored with you. I don't want to hear this stuff anymore. Oh, no, more grief over nothing. What are you upset about now? You misplaced your robe? Ah, I understand. But, you know, you try to be compassionate for a while. I offer you my intelligence. Now, why is this such a good thing to offer? If you're not going to offer unbridled passion, usually you offer intelligence. Right? It's almost like one or the other. And you're not going to get everybody that way. You're going to get half the people that way, because half the people want your unbridled passion. The other half want your intelligence. Now, your intelligence, why? Because if I offer you my intelligence, if I show you how smart I am, and there are many people walking around who'd spend all their time telling you how smart they are or showing you how smart they are, right? There's even radio programs where all you hear is somebody telling you how smart they are all day long. Thank God it's not me, because I realize how silly and stupid I am most of the day, because everything I thought I knew wasn't true. But there are the smart ones, the intelligent ones, and the intelligent ones, what they do is they make you feel smart because they're willing to talk to you. You get smart by association. You feel intelligent because they can actually understand you. They even have phrases like, that's very important. See, those phrases, that's it. That's it. You're ready to get undressed. I offer you my ability to make you feel special in some way. That's kind of the bottom line. I offer you my adoration. I'll adore you so that you could feel lovable. These are some of the things, my friends, that we put out there at the beginning. And here's the problem with this hypotenuse. Here's the problem with this hypothesis. Here's the problem with it. The problem is that since people meet us on these terms, when we get down to what we believe is uncovering the real self, which is not the real self, just negative aspects about yourself that come up when you're under pressure, when you start showing that, they start saying, what's this? What's this doing here? Okay, one time I'll hear it. What do you mean no sex? What do you mean you're not in the mood? What do you mean you've got some complaints? What do you mean you left the socks there today? You know? Okay, maybe you're not in a good mood today. Right? Okay, tomorrow too? And the next day? What happened to you? You're supposed to be the person who picks up the socks. What happened to you? You're supposed to be the person who's ready for sex at any moment. What happened to you? Well, what happened to you was that your game, right? You kind of, it wore it out. you use it so much, it gets very, very tiring, and you see through the mask. Now, you even begin seeing through the sexy mask. The people who present themselves as very sexy, your lover soon realizes you're not that sexy. You really make him believe you're sexy. So suddenly he finds himself looking elsewhere for what they consider to be the next apparently real sexy, which is probably not real sexy anyway. Or the intelligence. You know, you look for a real intelligent, and hey, you're not so smart after all. Let me find somebody else who's also artificially smart. You see, this is the thing. The thing is that it's all an act. It's all a presentation. It doesn't mean it's wrong, though. It doesn't mean it's bad. It means this is the commodity system of humandom. You know, D-U-M-B. This is the our way of getting by. What we've learned is that certain things are valued and other things are not. And so I'm going to present these things to you. Now, when we get back from our break, I want to tell you a little more about this that I discovered. So I won't be taking your calls immediately. But what is it that we're looking for, you know? There's another question I had about this, about thinking about the soldier with all the brass on his chest. I was thinking about tattooing. The other day, a friend of mine ran into, during the Puerto Rican Day Parade, she talked about all the men with the bare chests and the tattoos. And there were so many tattoos. And you know, I thought about tattoos finally. I said, you know what that is? It's like branding. It's like, you know, the way you brand a cow. It's self-branding. And I don't mean this in a derogatory way. I'm telling you something about me when I have a tiger written on my chest. Am I telling you that I'm a tiger, or am I telling you I want to be a tiger? I've seen people who have this big tattoo across their belly that says the word truth. T-R-U-T-H. I think, what? What is this? What does that, what made you want to write the word truth on your belly? Well, truth, because that's what I value. Truth? Is that why you put it there? Or is truth your name? Hi, truth, how are you? Or why would you put the word truth? And then they have vitality written on their shoulder. Why would you put the word on there? You know, is it like you become a walking dictionary or something? You know, maybe with a little definition next to it eventually that somebody could kind of pick up on. But what we brand ourselves, we're trying to communicate. We're trying to say, here's something I am, and I want to make believe I believe in. See, it's not that I really believe in, but I want to make believe I believe in it because I think I believe in it. But, you know, by tomorrow, I'm not going to believe in it anymore. But I did believe it at the time that I got this tattoo or at the time that I presented myself to you. Because I was hungry, because I wanted somebody to love me. I wanted somebody to need me. I wanted somebody to desire me. I spent my entire childhood not being loved or desired by anyone. So I'm looking around. And I saw you sitting there and I said, what does he need? Well, all right, he wants somebody to pick up his socks. I'll give him that. He wants somebody to make him feel intelligent. I'll give him that. He wants somebody to make him feel valuable. I'll give him that. He wants somebody to listen to his pain. I'll give him that. For now. But only for now. We're going to take a short break. I'll play some wonderful music. And when I come back, I'm going to be talking about dogs. I have this remarkable thing about you and dogs. But also think to yourself, what is it that you present about yourself that you try to sell to people? We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. So we're talking about, you just tuned in, we're talking about how you present yourself. And how you present yourself that may or may not be absolutely, absolutely accurate. In fact, it probably is not accurate. Think about this. Think about, and this is going to be change of subject for a moment. I want to talk about dogs. Now, I don't know if you're what they call a dog person. I never understand this. You know, I'm not a seltzer person. People talk like that. I'm not a dog person. I'm a cat person. Well, think about dogs for a minute, because I'm more familiar with dogs than I am with cats, although I know cats really well. How do you pick a dog? Now, dogs are very specific. I was reading yesterday, or day before yesterday, about dogs that have now cost $230,000. Why would a dog cost $230,000? Because the dog is trained by the Navy SEALs, or by somebody who trains Navy SEAL dogs, as a guard dog. Now, what do you think that makes him? That makes him a rabid, a Rottweiler who's going to rip your heart out? Or No. It's a very calm dog. You see, these are dogs where they never get angry. This is the idea. The idea is these dogs are trained to perform in a certain way, but they never get angry. They're always responsive to their masters. I thought that was kind of fascinating, that you respond not out of anger, just out of that's what you were trained to do. That's how you do it. It says, go get that guy, you go get that guy. You're not mad at that guy, you just got to go get him because that's your job. So how do you pick a dog? What do you look for? Do you want a dog that's cute? Do you want a dog that people admire? Do you want a dog that's low maintenance? Do you want one that's easily trained? Do you want to be able to incorporate this dog into your life in a way that doesn't shake up your life too much? Do you want a dog that has a similar energy level to yours? You know, like if he's too perky, you may not want him because you're not perky. Do you want to pick a dog that's strong because you're scared? And most people who have vicious dogs are scared people. You know, they're saying, please protect me, you know. Get a Doberman or a Rottweiler or a Pitbull. Whatever happened to Dobermans? Did they go the way of those blackberry trees? You know, I don't see them anymore, anywhere. All right, so anyway, how do you pick a dog? The reason I say that is it's probably how you pick your mates. It's probably how you pick your friends. Same way you would pick a dog. You want to pick somebody who's going to be not too hard to maintain. You want to pick somebody who's easily trained. Now, that may sound kind of like you're going to be dominant, but even if you're not dominant, you want to be able to train them. See, here's the great thing about dogs. I went to a party recently, and somebody told me, oh, but this dog is there, and this dog doesn't like very many people. And this dog can't just, you know, it's... And she, the one who is throwing the party, has this big attachment to her dog, and if a dog doesn't like somebody... So it's kind of humorous, but I was going to this party for a friend of mine who was going to the party. So I said, okay, I'll go. And what I did was I just fed the dog under the table from the minute I got there. And I picked up a cracker, put it under the table, fed the dog, right? Sort of canapé under the table, fed the dog. Sort of a little something, fed the dog. The little dog was all over me. Dog absolutely adored me. Because that's the nice thing about dogs. If you feed them, they like you. So after we left, she, the hostess, told my friend, what a wonderful man he is. My dog loved him so much. Sure, I'm a wonderful man. I know how to feed people who want to be fed. So how do you pick your dogs? Same way you pick your mates. You want somebody easily trained? You want somebody who people are going to admire? Do you want to be with somebody who's going to make other people admire them and therefore make you look good? Do you want somebody who's low maintenance? Absolutely, everybody wants somebody who's low maintenance. You know, well, maybe that's not true. Maybe if you've got an abundance of energy, you pick somebody who's high maintenance. Do you want to pick a dog that's faithful? You know, you're nice. This dog is going to be absolutely faithful. That's the way you kind of pick mates. You want to pick somebody who will never go away and never run off. You know, there are certain kind of dogs. You know, you open the door and they're out the door and they're never coming back. Terriers are like that, if I remember right. You know, that's a nice little dog, but it's bounding with energy. And one thing it doesn't want is an apartment. Right? You open the dog, boom, your dog is gone, and you're running all over town yelling, Scotty, where are you, bro? You know, nope, headed for better places. No, you want a dog that's going to stick with you in some way. So you do that with mates as well. You want a mate that'll stick with you, which makes a lot of people choose dysfunctional people. Because if you choose somebody who's, for example, an alcoholic or a drug addict or, you know, very depressed, they're not going anywhere. And you can say, well, all right, one thing I could do is depend on your being here. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We're going to be taking your calls in just a couple of minutes at 212-209-2900. Did you ever realize that golden retrievers can't get hurt? There's something about golden retrievers. They always have they're always in a good mood. I mean, they're always in a good mood, and they're always loving, and they're always attentive. Why doesn't everybody own a golden retriever? If everybody wanted happiness in their life, happiness, if that was the goal, give me a happy person, then when it goes to choosing a dog, you choose a golden retriever because that's a happy dog. Happy in apartments, happy in homes, happy in water, happy out of water. They're happy dogs. They're always... Always ready. Always ready to play. And if you don't want to play with them, it's okay. They play with themselves. You know, they'll go chase their tail. So why don't people have golden retrievers? Because people want different things and not just somebody who's mentally sane or happy. People want something that fits their needs. They want somebody who's going to value them quite a bit. And betrayal. We have such a thing about betrayal, we have such a worry about betrayal all the time, that we want to avoid anybody who looks like they would betray us on one hand, and on the other hand, we are very often very attracted to people who betray you. So, for example, if you know if you're a woman and you have a relationship with a man who's married, and then he leaves his wife, and he's with you, and then you find out he's seeing somebody else. And you say, how could he do such a thing? Well, what do you mean, how could he do such a thing? He's done such a thing. He did such a thing. You were there. Vice versa, same thing. Man marries a woman who's married. She gets divorced. She's now with him. Now she goes with somebody else. He discovers it, and he says, how could you do such a horrible thing to me? It's like the scorpion, you know, it's that scorpion story. And that's you must have remembered the story, but it was from that movie where the scorpion says to the frog, will you take me across the river? And the frog says, no, I won't take you across the river because you're going to sting me and kill me. And the scorpion says, no, I won't. And so the frog takes the scorpion across the river, and at the end of it, the scorpion stings the frog, and the frog looks at the scorpion in his dying heap, and he says, well, why'd you do that? Scorpion said, because that's what I do. We all have characters that persist. We do certain things. And love is a phantom. You just kind of not expect that it's going to give you exactly what you think, and it's going to be all about fairness. It's not. It's about illusions, and it's about being willing to accept the illusory part of yourself and your partner in the relationship. Now, if you could accept that, if you could live without illusions, right? It's very, very tough. Most people can't. You got a good shot at it. 212-209-2900. Let me take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on WBAI. Hello there.
Not yet. Give it again.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. I'm ready to take a couple of calls on this. Of course, my question is, what do you put out there to all people? Set. Let's take a call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Armand.
Yes.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Well, I was just going to say that, you know, I have a Yorkie, you know, and he's really low maintenance. He's high energy. He just loves me beyond, you know, just unconditionally. And he just brings me so much love and joy.
Okay, now I hope you don't mind me saying this, but you say the word he loves me unconditionally. You mean he licks your face and pays attention to you?
Yeah.
Right? And you feed him, right?
Yeah.
All right? So this dog is better than any human you could have. Do you ever meet a human as good as this?
No.
Right? Have you been married or been with somebody for a period of time?
I've been married 5 times.
5 times? And you've never found a Yorkie? I bet you found people who you thought were Yorkies, and then they turned out not to be, right?
Yes, they turn out to be controlling and... controlling.
And that's the trouble. The trouble is you got to find people who are Yorkies, who are real Yorkies. But you see, even the real Yorkies, you got to keep feeding. Because if you don't feed them and somebody else comes along and feeds them, you kind of lose the Yorkie's love.
So in other words, I think I'm finding people that love me unconditionally, but they really want to control me.
I'm saying you find people who you believe... who offer to love you unconditionally. But that's just the act that they do. See, it's what they do to get fed. And
right.
So it's like the Yorkie does it to get fed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they all do it to get fed. And the idea is, if you're going to feed me, if you're going to make me stay alive and feel good, I'm going to give you just what you need. You need unconditional love? I'll lick your face 100 times. Now, your Yorkie, who I know is a face licker, he is a face licker, isn't he?
Yes.
All Yorkies are face lickers.
He licks everywhere.
He licks everywhere. Do you want to hear a great thing you should do one day? Somebody told me about this with a Yorkie. One day, you got to take yourself and lay yourself on the floor. You could be dressed or undressed. And you got to put peanut butter on little parts of your body and promise yourself you're not going to move. And you put peanut butter on your nose, and you put it on your ears, and you put it on your forehead, and you put it on your chin. And then you let your dog in. And the dog will start licking the food. Now, that may sound disgusting to you, but you challenge yourself to not respond. Be one of the high points of your life. You get
He licks me. He waits for me to get out of the shower to lick me, wherever he can to wipe me off.
You can't find a mate like that. Where do you find a guy like that in life? No wonder you've been through 5 marriages.
They all start out that way.
And then they turn out throwing you a towel.
Yeah.
See, so the truth of it is, what's your name, by the way?
Krista.
The truth of it is, Krista, what happens is they recognize that that's what you want. And so they offer you that. And because that's what you want so much, they offer you that. When finally they seal the deal, when they finally get in there, they realize that they're not getting the kind of feedback that they wanted. They're finding out the deal didn't work for them, and their real self starts to show through. And things and complaints and this undivided attention, that's why you're better off with a Yorkie. You know, until you find somebody. Now, you know what would be nice if you met a man who also had a Yorkie? Did you ever meet one?
No. So I never have.
This may be an interesting place to meet your new mate. Go to like a Yorkie convention or something.
Mm.
You know, find it. Because if he likes a Yorkie and you like a Yorkie, odds are you can wind up licking each other after the shower. I didn't mean to be raunchy, but it's a nice image.
I love you. You're so insightful.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. I have the image. I can't get that one out of my head. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm excellent.
I have a German Shepherd.
Good for you. There's a good dog.
Gorgeous dog. Absolutely. I see, now, and you're right, there's a lot of projection going on because I wouldn't mind people thinking I'm a lot like my dog.
Right, a lot like your dog, except your dog, wait a minute now, your dog is sometimes mean.
You're absolutely right.
I know it, I can tell, because I can tell you're sometimes mean.
You know, not enough, I think.
Well, you see, that's the trouble, that's what meanness is. Meanness is not enough. Meanness is anger that's residual, you see, and that's what you have. And that's manifested in your dog. Your dog goes around and somewhere out of no reason at all winds up biting somebody or barks.
She's never bitten anybody, but she doesn't like people she doesn't know. The people who she knows, her little, small little group, she loves enormously.
Let me ask you something. What's your name?
Liz.
Liz, do you like people who you don't know? Do you tend to not like people you don't know?
Unfortunately,
but,
I do.
But you like to hang out with the people you do know because you're familiar with them. So there's a little relationship. I think your dog has learned from you.
Well, she was a little nutsies when I got her. She came from puppy mills and pet stores, and I ended up getting her out of a shelter and found out later she was a pure German Shepherd. She's brilliant, and that's a quality that I have to have. You know, I don't know why, but I love
well,
the fact
let's
that she's
think
so
about
smart.
Why you like brilliance.
Yeah. Why? She's brilliant.
Why do you like a brilliant dog? Because it means they're trainable. You see, if you find... Go ahead, you know what I'm talking about.
I like to communicate, too. I mean, I feel that I can communicate with her because she really understands everything.
Now, have you found a mate to be like that?
I have a husband who's pretty smart, too.
He's not as trainable.
Oh, God, no.
You can't train him, you know?
No,
you can't. You know, you've got to learn the right doggy treat to give your husband. What does he want that you don't give? Do you pick up his socks?
No.
Did you ever pick up his socks?
Yeah, unfortunately.
That's what I mean. You see, now there it is. There's a story right there. Once you picked up his socks, now you don't pick up his socks. So he's not trainable. If you want him to be trainable, pick up his socks. Then you could run him ragged.
He's you know, it's funny because the dog is my alter ego. I mean, she's the way I'd like to be. You know, she's beautiful. Beautiful dog, absolutely beautiful. Black with silver paws, she's gorgeous and brilliant and beautiful, but she's not as nice to strangers as I wish she were.
So she is like you, and what you want in life is you want someone.
I wish I was as pretty as her.
Well, you know, the truth is, it's not that she's so pretty, but you want someone to find you as beautiful as you find her.
Yeah.
You see, because it doesn't matter if you're really objectively pretty or not, but if someone finds that beauty in you,
that's true.
That's going to set you go to peace. You know, that's going to make you feel more comfortable inside.
That's and the intelligence in me that I admire in her. Yeah, that's true.
And then go pick up your husband's socks.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
Right.
Thank you.
212-209. I'd say that to husbands too. Go pick up your wife's socks. You know, this is not just about women and men belittling themselves. No, this is about learning that what you offer at the beginning, you know, may be very valued. 212-209-2900, time for one more call. Let's get it in there. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Hello.
We got about 1.5 minutes.
Love your show. Love this topic.
Thank you. What's your name?
My name is Michael, and the pet that I have is a cat who is an Aries cat, and it's just a wonderful female cat that has got qualities of bright, energetic, awareness are some of the qualities that I like.
And Michael, she's devoted.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I could hear it in you the minute you get on the phone. You want somebody who's devoted, because sometimes you're like a bull in a china shop. Sometimes you break things and you don't even mean to do it, and you want somebody who's going to be devoted to you.
I know what I don't want, and I had a past marriage, which is Scorpio, and which was rocky, and I don't want, but I do want things like Aries and Taurus, who I have found to be more amiable to me.
All right. Well, Michael, unfortunately, I have to be going. I keep my promises here on the station that we're off at 5 minutes before. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Enjoy
Love
your cat.
Show.
Thank you.
Love
Thank
yourself.
You so much. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. If you want to rebroadcast today's program, you can go to WBAI.org. where they have it on broadcast for 2 weeks, or then you can go to thepositivemind.com and you can communicate with me directly, or lastly, comments on Facebook, please.